Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening, you can do so on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can also check us out on iHeartRadio, as well as TuneIn Radio and the SiriusXM app. We're available on all of those other listening devices. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. And real quick, you slipped back in for a second. It's just JWright929.
Yep.
Don't follow the follow the hacked account.
No,
we do not need that going on out here.
Did I tell you one there after?
Don't tell me they came back for something
No. I don't think anything. I think it's been completely deactivated.
Okay.
But
I was about to
went on the ESPN national show after Ja got traded.
Mm-hmm.
And they were reading, like, they started the spot off by, like, taking umbrage with some of the things that were in my profile, which I'm fine with. I could defend all of those. But I was like, I got bad news for y'all. Yeah, that account.
That account, not me.
I wish. I wish. It was only like 15 years of firing off gold from the top of the dome. But nonetheless, at JWright929, we dropped the ESPN. It's cleaner that way. Thank you, Justin Timberlake from The Social Network. My coach, your coach, everyone's coach. Most importantly, Team Thad's coach as well as program director. He, of course, is Coach Norton Hurd IV. He's on the socials at Dream Big Hurd. Coach, good day, sir.
Man, happy hump day. Happy afternoon.
All right, let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. We'll start with some buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. It, of course, is game week. Tigers, UNLV, 9 p.m. Central Time. Gonna be a lot of sleepy people at church on Sunday. That or church might have a lighter crowd on Sunday, 9 p.m. It is on Fox. It'll be the first game officially, according to the University of Memphis Media Relations notes. We got game notes. We'll talk about those in a little bit. But 9 p.m. on Fox. Tigers, I think, George, double check. I've seen some books drop it down to 4.5. So maybe my thoughts were moving lines rather than my actions. Maybe that's how sharp I am right now. So something to monitor. Maybe if you're thinking about the Tigers, maybe go ahead and get it now when it's over a field goal. But again, I'm not that big of an expert, so don't take that for what it's worth.
Yep, down to 4.5.
All right, that's what I'd seen that. It got up to, I think, 6.5 last week. Tim and I got super greedy, and we're trying to hold out for
hold out for that 7?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to push that to it.
Yeah, we were hoping to hold out for that 7, but we did not.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you the way Ben go, ain't Memphis or am I tripping? UNLV didn't got better. Ain't they better than like a touchdown or UNLV has got? Because I know UNLV used to not be that good years ago when I was taking kids to visit. They didn't even want you to go to the football games or whatever on a visit.
Both schools are in similar positions in that they're in leagues that they don't want to be in. I do think that sports are important at both schools. So obviously, Memphis is an older school and has a deeper tradition. But while UNLV has the basketball heights with national championships and whatnot, but they're both kind of in that same spot where they're in this universe. They don't have tons and tons of money, but they're aspirational. And they are spending at the rate to try and move up. So they're kind of in pretty similar spots.
So they're putting a lot into the football
Correct.
Team these days. Okay, that makes sense.
They hired Dan Mullen last year. So
Dan Mullen the coach?
Dan Mullen is the coach, which we'll get to this. This is going to be kind of the first thing we'll talk about, but the Athletic has now got their full college football preview. They rank all teams 1 through 138. They'd previously ranked them, but now we've got the season previews. And one of the categories is who is their coach, which I just think like that's funny. Like it used to be like you'd be like in an era where it's like, you usually knew most of the coaches. Like, that's pertinent information. I need to know that. That's where that guy is. It's like, who is the coach and who's the quarterback? Which who's the quarterback? I do think is more needed than who is the coach.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of getting close. Like it's there are more like Jason Candle at UConn, totally forgotten about that.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Moore Jr. now at Colorado State.
I remember that. When he stepped down.
I don't know why, but you bring up a good point. It's easier to remember that Jim Moore Jr. is at Colorado State than it is that Jason Candle is at UConn. I do not know why, but because those were basically like moves within 24, 48 hours of each other. I have no idea why it's easier to remember that. God's watching. I have no idea who's at Toledo. Who replaced Jason Candle? No clue. I also saw this. So there's some hero on YouTube. So DeMichael and I have talked about how when you get into kind of that month right before football kicks off, that's peak go watching old games on YouTube. There is some hero out there that is putting entire seasons of college football, like 3-hour packages of like trying to tell the story of an entire season. No voiceover, just like week by week, the games, and then like the list, the who got, you know, the ranked teams that won, like trying to tell the story. I have wasted so much time in the last like 5 days watching that. Like there was the 1998 was the first one that caught my eye. That's the year that Tennessee, the 98 championship season. And God, did Arkansas work really hard to lose that game. Also, you forget that Syracuse game was quite close. But I've been wasting a lot of time watching it. And the reason I brought up Toledo, I totally forgot that's where Matt Campbell was before Iowa State.
I have Toledo's current head coach.
And it is?
No guesses, zero guesses.
Don't even want to try it.
Mike Jacobs.
Nope. Didn't even want to try that. that was the showrunner for Boy Meets World.
No, he was the head coach at Mercer for 2 years where he won back-to-back Southern Conference championships.
Okay. Sure. You could have made all, like, that could have been a plot from Boy Meets World. Sure. I would have had no reason. I mean, I think they were Temple fans. No, that was when the Cosby show. They were both from Philly, but Cosby obviously was the Temple grad. But, would never have had a guess on that one.
Jeffrey, you know casual football fans who not real football, just casualty. Some of them thinking now from Tennessee, they think Peyton Manning won a championship, and you have to tell them it was T. Martin that won the championship. But I'm telling you, casual fans, when you hear 98, that sounds around Peyton Manning, and an average person, if you're not from Tennessee, and he didn't win it. So you was just thinking, I thought of T. Martin came to my head or whatever. Because a lot of the world don't know who T. Martin is. Not today.
George, can you look it up? I can't remember if it was T's senior year. There was like a South Carolina game where like he went like 27 for 27. Can you look up who still has the most consecutive completions? I want to say it finally got broken. But also, it got broken. T should ask for some great deflation. When you're throwing the ball like T was and he didn't have bubble screens and, you know, all the easy completions. Like, T's record should hold more value than whoever broke it, I think.
Well, he only played a year or two, right? Because he had...
Junior and senior year.
Huh?
Junior and... So, he played two. So, he won the title his junior year, came back, and I think they went to the Fiesta Bowl again the next year.
Okay.
Most consecutive pass completions in a single game in college football... Western Carolina quarterback Taron Dickens against Wofford. He had 46 straight completions.
Do you have FBS? Because Western's FCS.
FBS is Dominique Davis, who was at, where was he playing at?
I have
ECU. 36 consecutive completions against Navy.
Yeah, I'm still going to defend T on this one.
Yeah, that's SEC.
Like South Carolina was barely SEC at that point. That was like the 0-11 South Carolina. That was like South Carolina like 0-0. That was before Lou Holtz took the job and they got like functional. Like Lou Holtz,
they always been in the SEC, I think.
On paper.
And they was like Vanderbilt.
No, because it's even worse. Like, so they were ACC for a while. Then they went. Yeah, they went. Then they went independent, and then they went SEC in '92 when the SEC wanted to expand so they could do the championship game. So they added Arkansas to the West and South Carolina to the East. So '92 ish.
Okay, yeah, I started watching that. I wasn't watching before 92, Coach. So, yeah, ever since I've been.
But, like, when George Rogers wins the Heisman at South Carolina, they were not an SEC team. If I recall, at that point, they are an ACC team.
So, South Carolina was, like, Notre Dame for a couple years? Like,
yeah. That was actually, there was a period of time where that wasn't, like when Pitt was in their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
Independent. Like Penn State, most of Penn State's heyday with titles is independents. Like it wasn't because there wasn't the TV money. So you weren't really giving it up. Like you got to control your schedule more. People were more open to playing each other. Like you got more freedom. And then obviously as these conferences started getting bigger and bigger television checks, well then it started to become like, yeah, we probably need to go do that. Mm-hmm. And then I just respect Notre Dame because they were trying to get into the Big Ten at one time, and then there was so much anti-Catholic sentiment, the Big Ten wouldn't let them in, and they've just held a grudge the entire time. And as someone who's deep down a grudge guy, I just have to respect that.
Yeah. And at this point, if they get anywhere, it'll be ACC, and they too big for that, because that's where all the other sports play at.
On paper.
What do you mean?
If they go to a conference... That's fascinating. George, would you bet this? What happens first? Notre Dame goes to the Big Ten, or Notre Dame joins the Super League, which probably has less conference affiliation. It might be, like, I think there's a chance the Super League is more divided divisionally,
right,
than it is on conference branding. Now, they may want to keep the branding to a certain degree. But I think if you made me vote, I would say Super League before Big Ten.
Yeah. That's probably where we're headed.
Because my thought, Coach, so yes, you are correct. Legally, if Notre Dame wants to join a conference, they are contractually obligated to join the ACC.
Yeah, when has that stopped anyone before?
I think that... That penalty really changes, I think, around 2030.
So when does the Super League start? Because I heard them talking about it. I didn't know it was a date on it.
It may never.
Okay.
You'd be having to, like, project. But I think Notre Dame's first, quote-unquote, conference affiliation in football will be Super League. That would be my guess. And that is pure speculation. No one's figured that out. All right, we'll get into that. Those fun topics during the list, because we have, of course, more news on the eligible player front, or who's not eligible, or who was ineligible but has a temporary restraining order. We've got developments. We'll talk about that during the list. We're going to start with some buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. Steve Cofield, who does sidelines for the UNLV games, he's also the host of Cofield & Company, great show name out in ESPN Las Vegas. He's going to preview Tigers UNLV with us. Then we'll get into the list to kick off hour number three. We'll get into some game notes from Tigers UNLV. We'll have more preview throughout the program. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But let's fire it up. Let's do some buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. All right, boys, buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. Tiger football will be better this year.
I I'm going to short it, Jeffrey.
All right.
And the reason why, some of this can be on me. I've been keeping up with preseason, not as much as last year. But at one point last year, I thought that we were so good in the fact we were supposed to get into, we was like predicted to get in the playoffs, right? Am I tripping? Like
George, correct me if I'm wrong, because also one of the, I did also rewatch last season on my timelines.
You've nice. Been busy on that.
Boys,
busy's a word for it.
I vaguely recall this. They started 7-0.
Yeah, you remember we yep. were the favorite.
7-0 and were ranked. Then they have the UAB loss.
On the road to Alex Mortensen.
Correct. The Mortensen interim coach bump. I want to say after UAB was the USF win. Because
yep.
I'm doing this by memory, because they didn't, like, after all they showed was the UAB loss. And you're like, oh my God, they were 7-0. The reason why if I am recalling the season correctly, there was the shakiness of would Brennan Lewis play?
That's because right. He did get hurt.
Lewis got hurt in the UAB game. AJ came in and it looked bad. And then AJ, like, it got so bad that it just went to like AJ hero ball mode. And he damn near brought him back and won the game. But then they lose. They turn the next week, beat USF and beat Rice. Then they lose the last four to end the season. The last three were they lose Tulane at home on a Friday night. Was it a Thursday night or a Friday night? It was a Friday night. I think they lost at home to Tulane on a Friday night. Then they went to East Carolina and lost late. And then Navy beat them on Thanksgiving. And they finished 8-4. But at one point, they were sitting at 8-1. 8-1. And were like, they still controlled their own destiny. Even with as bad as the UAB loss was, they still controlled their own destiny, because they kind of got transitive property bump by beating USF. Like, they got the credit for the wins that USF got. Like, they were ahead of Boise. They then moved, like, they were still getting, like, they were getting transitive property credit for Florida, and then they had beaten Arkansas. They had a P4 win. And so, despite losing to UAB, like, they were still in the driver's seat, and then they lost the three to end the year.
And that's why I kind of shorted it, Jeffrey, because I didn't realize that the end of the year ended that bad. I know, but I remember the first 7, 8, 9 weeks, like, Memphis was supposed to be they were favorite, and they had the destiny. If they had their own destiny to become the team that went to the playoffs.
100%.
So I say that to say it's hard for me to say, like, even if this team do that same thing, I'm like, okay, they start off so hot. Now, what I'm seeing from them, Jeffrey, I plan on going to games soon or practice soon. It looks like they have really, really good energy. It looks like the new staff is awesome. You know what I mean? But,
so,
you know,
I'm glad you brought that up, because I actually think I want to sell it rather than short it.
Okay.
But I think the reason why I want to short it is exactly what you're talking about. I think right now we know vibes are good, but we don't really know if the team is good.
I want to stress,
don't know, because nobody's really seen much of practice. So you're dependent on what people want to tell you, which you always have to kind of filter through, because more times than not, when people want to tell you stuff, there's a reason they want to tell you. It's not just, hey, like, let's just chat. There's usually an objective behind it. Huff is obviously an unbelievable communicator, and it doesn't take long to realize, like, man, that guy can pump me up. But I do think as of this moment, all we really know are vibes, because almost the entire skill position room is new. We still, on paper, don't know who's playing quarterback. I think I would actually feel comfortable betting that Marcus Stokes is going to be the quarterback, but we don't know. Like, that could even be a breaking ball. We know Tapp is probably going to be one of the best defenders in all of group of six. But, I mean, I think CBS flashed a graphic 2 days ago. I want to say most new players is Oklahoma State. There was one other team. Memphis has, like, the most new players, like the third most in FBS. So I don't, like, you may think that this is better, but, like, I don't know how you can feel solid.
Yeah, 100% about it. No, I'm with you. Like you say, the vibes feel great. You know, I done ran to Huff a couple times, like you say. I think he's really good for the city. Like you say, his communication, what he stands on, the staff. He actually got a pretty good son by the 7th, 8th grade. He's a good basketball player and everything like that. But, like,
he may be fooling us, but just the fact that it feels like the way he carries himself, like he wants to be here, that helps.
Yes.
Like, that, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of what I always wanted to yell at Ryan. It's not that hard. Like, I have no idea how Charles does or doesn't feel. I know that he's a football coach, and they oftentimes want a better job, so more times they want to move. But the fact that I can sit there and go, he makes me believe that he wants to be here, good enough. Moving on.
Yeah, for sure. So he give you that vibe. Now, with all of this, I don't really want to hurt or down the conversation. You definitely need chemistry off the court in sports or off the field. It do carry you so far, but you still got to be good, okay? And no matter how good the vibes are, you have to be a good player and a good team to produce wins. So we'll see that this week. And that's why I was asking you earlier. I'm like, are we on the same level of UNLV? I thought we were higher. I could be wrong. You know what I mean? So that's what I kind of was asking you that.
So are you talking this football team versus that football team, like on a power rating? Or are you talking about where the programs are in the larger universe of college athletics?
No, just team against team or whatever.
Flip a coin.
Almost
every power rating you see, like today, I guess the Athletic's not necessarily a power rating, but like today in the Athletic, UNLV's at 44, Memphis was at 62, but you go over to Conley, and I think they're separated by 4 or 5 points, 4 or 5 places, which is pretty negligible. I mean, that's on a neutral field. Maybe someone's favored by a point, but not much. And this game, when it opened in the summer, opened at UNLV -3, which typically tells you, at least when they released it, we think these two teams are pretty even, but one team's playing at home. There's 3 points.
Makes sense. Okay, so they're a lot even than I thought. Okay. It feels like Memphis and UNLV are playing each other more in different sports. I remember we played the basketball team last year. I'm not trying to bring that game up either because I think we were favored by a good enough amount, I think, or whatever. When that happened,
it was a great day for Josh.
Huh?
It was a great day for Josh.
Yeah. Also, that's probably how that happened. Josh and Penny might have just got together.
No, you know what? That would have been agreed to, because I think when Josh got hired, we already knew Memphis was playing UNLV, and we're like, oh, Josh is coming back. I think, honestly, Coach, the biggest reason that it's happening is when you're occupying the space that Memphis and UNLV are, which is probably the G6 program that's good enough to beat you, that's when the P4s don't really want to play you. And so you wind up being in this territory where it's like, well, nobody else will play us. Y'all want to play? That's kind of how the Boise series came about. And we saw today the news that Mississippi State exercised the force majeure clause in their contract with their home and home with Memphis that stated if the SEC went to 9 games, they could cancel the game without penalty. So the 2 games that were originally scheduled have been canceled. And I want to say, George, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a game in Starkville at 2031.
I thought it was even further back than that. I thought it was 2034. Yep.
That's entirely possible.
They're going from a true home and home in
to a one off.
Yep.
And, you know, what is the college football landscape in 2034? You are correct. From Jonah, the 28-29 series is canceled, and they are playing a game in 2034.
On the road.
Correct. In Starkville. So the UNLV kind of occupies the same space. Like, it's just, so now you're in the spot where, okay, we can't get the P4s. Typically, like, what you're going to wind up doing is, if we're trying to give ourselves the best shot of making the playoff, it's like, all right, well, who's the best of the rest? And then kind of Memphis and UNLV wind up being like staring at each other.
Okay, there we go. And you mentioned Boise. Ain't Boise is in the new Pac-12 or no?
Boise is in the new Pac-12. UNLV was rumored to be going to the new Pac-12. Unclear if that was posturing to get a better deal from the Mountain West or if there was political issues between the Pac-12 just really wanted UNLV, but they didn't want Nevada. And then the legislature was like, no, you got to take both. And UNLV is now in the Mountain West. UNLV has remained in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Also in the Mountain West this year, I know you were thinking this, Northern Illinois.
In the Mountain West?
Correct.
You're talking about Northern Illinois?
Yep.
NIU that's red and black.
The Huskies.
Yep. That team.
Well, you know what?
How many mountains you got in Illinois?
If they did,
do they even have? I'll settle for a hill.
If they did that, I know it's too far away. But at one point, if it wasn't
now,
so
I should
far
state
away,
football only.
Oh, okay, they got good football.
And then I want to say Horizon League, everything else. Because aren't all the Wisconsin satellites? Aren't they all in the Horizon League? Like UW Milwaukee. UW Green Bay. I want to say that's all Horizon League, and I want to say that's what happened to Northern Illinois. They went to Mountain West football only, and I think Horizon League everything else. Also, Coach, this is our fun fact of the week. Reminder: Sacramento State is in the MAC.
Oh, there's too much going on now.
Uh-huh. And
they need to switch. Northern Illinois is in Sacramento.
Well, it was related. It was like, so Sacramento State was trying, I guess, to buy their way into the Pac-12, and then the Pac-12 was like, no thanks. And then Northern Illinois went to the Mountain West, and that opened a spot in the MAC, and I think basically they told the MAC, we'll play for free, and the MAC, which is a cash-strapped conference, was like, sure. You're paying your
Bring
own way.
Out.
Yeah, come on.
That Shaq and Bibby is the coach,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
2 notes. Northern Illinois is in the Horizon League for everything else. And Illinois, not a single mountain.
Not a single mountain. What about a hill? Anything?
Google just said
highest
mostly
point.
Flat and gently rolling.
Okay.
In Illinois.
Soft hills.
Go with that.
Gentle hills.
Fun times.
I think the other aspect of the Tigers, I think you can talk me into they are actually better in the sense of if this year's team played last year's team, I would bet on this year's team to win, but they don't have a better record. Their schedule's significantly tougher. Because basically, like 5 of their 6 toughest games are all on the road.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll preview that game with Steve Cofield. He is, of course, the sideline reporter for the UNLV radio network. He also hosts a show on ESPN Las Vegas, Cofield and Company. He joins us next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.
Yeah. Steve Covindle is the sideline reporter for the UNLV Runnin' Rebel Radio Network. Also the host of Cofield & Company. Great name, by the way. 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific on ESPN Las Vegas. He's on the Everything app at Steve Cofield. Also check out the Cofield & Company YouTube page. Kind enough to join us today. Steve, I guess let's start here. Have you ever in all your years had a had a game that you're previewing that you feel less certain about?
Well, I mean, to be honest, there's been a couple of UNLV games where they've played FCS opponents where the flow of information was not great from that side. But, yeah, this one's wacky, and the fact that it looks like both schools won't be putting out a depth chart publicly is a new level.
All right, so let's start with the quarterbacks because, well, let's be real, that's what we all care about. If you made me guess today, while Memphis has not announced a starter, I would be willing to go to the window, and if there was a book offering, who do you think would start? I would take Marcus Stokes. Do you feel the same way about either quarterback at UNLV?
Starter, no, because Dan Mullen could roll out Alex Orji on the first play. Technically, that would be the starter. I would be willing to bet on reps, snaps in the game that Jackson Arnold is probably going to get 80%. I mean, last year, Mullen did the same thing. Early on, he actually did have both quarterbacks on the field for a play. Calandry was split out, and Anthony Calandry, who's now at Nebraska, and Orji was under center. But in the end, the game split was 58-15 for Calandria. So anyone who saw the Mullen comments and saw him say or heard him say, hey, we're going to play both quarterbacks and thinks it's going to be a 50-50 split, that's ridiculous. One of them is going to play most of the game, and I think it's going to be Jackson Arnold.
Now, are you prepared to go from one of the most fun quarterbacks in college football with Anthony Calandria, although that does also sometimes come with the what are you doing throw, to one of the least fun quarterbacks in all of college football, Jackson Arnold?
Well, they think he's actually more suited to the offense they want to run, because last year with Calandria, I think they discovered early on they had to run a different offense. Like they had to roll him out a lot more. They really couldn't throw from the pocket super well. Arnold is a bigger guy. I think he matches their offense better. Orji is a bigger guy, matches the offense better. I also think they're going to run a lot. They're going to have a lot of downhill looks where Arnold and when Orji's in, they're going to be running the ball. And I believe, and I know they believe, that they can fix Jackson Arnold. I don't know if they can, but you know, this is a place that has a reputation that's developing as a quarterback rehab spot. And Mullen and Corey Dennis said, especially Dennis, I talked to him a couple weeks ago, and he said, hey, you know, I've been recruiting Jackson Arnold since, you know, back when he was in high school in Texas, and I tried to get him to Ohio State, and we tried to get him last year in the transfer portal and couldn't get him. So they believe in him, and I'm sure they think they've got him ready to turn the corner.
Having covered Dan Mullen teams since he was back at Mississippi State, he is not afraid to run the quarterback. We even looked it up because I was trying to remember, I think it was Dak's junior year. I think Dak had like 210 carries, even in a year in which I think he threw for over 3,000 yards. But I think that's kind of the vibe that you're getting is this team wants to pound the rock.
They do. They want to use the quarterback run. I mean, both of these guys are, you know, pretty big and physical. Orji's a monster. I mean, he's probably pushing 245 pounds now at 6'3". And, you know, Arnold's a good-sized guy, over 220 pounds. They've got a smaller back in Jet Thomas who had a really good year last year. He's had a great career. They actually, believe it or not, he averaged 7 yards a carry last year, but they only gave him the ball, I think it was like 14.4 times in terms of touches between rushing and receiving. I think they'll up that a little bit, but they've also got another power back, a smaller guy, but he's 5'8", 220, and Jalen Glover, who goes all the way back to like Florida recruiting days with Mullen and Utah, who wasn't healthy all of last year, but when he got healthy in the second half, he was really good. So I think they are going to try to be a running team. I think the other thing they're going to do is you're going to see jet sweeps because they have a bunch of pretty fast receivers. We might even see a freshman out there, a guy from Atlanta, and Peyton Zachary might get a couple of carries. So I think there's going to be a lot of groundwork. And then the passing game, I think, for the most part, is going to be, I don't want to call it dink and dunk, but a lot of short stuff that essentially just replaces the run when they don't run.
Well, I think that's kind of the other flip side of this argument. I kind of, maybe this is blind trust, but I kind of trust Dan's going to figure out offense one way or the other. I've seen him do it with varying different talent levels at quarterback, and he's always found a way to move the football. It seems to me that the big questions for UNLV are on the other side of the ball. Do they feel better this year, or are they kind of talking around it?
No, they feel better. I mean, they're confident. Last year, Paul Gunther got boosted to D.C., early in the spring, but I don't think they had really recruited to his style and his system. So now he's been to D.C. for a full season. He didn't have a great season. They've been able to retool the defense in terms of the talent they have. And they also made a big addition by bringing back a guy named Michael Shear, who was the defense coordinator under Barry Odom, and he had two good years. And his second year here at UNLV was really good. And now Shear's on the staff as a linebackers coach. So I think, in essence, he's a co-defense coordinator. So now I think they've got better coaching. They also didn't have a safeties coach last year because Gunther got bumped up from safeties coach to D.C. So I think there was a little confusion there during games. So now they have two coaches again for the defensive backs. But that's the biggest thing. The defensive backs have to be a lot better. Got to be better communication because they got torched throughout the season on chunk plays. And if they do that again, I mean, they can have a good season, but they certainly are not going to be the choice for group of six rep in the CFP.
Do you think they feel better about this team than they did at this time last year?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I actually think they feel better. I think they had confidence in Calandria, but they were also worried about Anthony's penchant for throwing
yellow
the ball
in
peril. Yeah, I mean, he gets crazy. And the other thing is he's I don't want to use a stupid term, but he's kind of a Dipsy Doo guy where he just starts running with his head cut off. And listen, it worked against the Mountain West competition. I mean, he's fast. He was able to turn the corner. He was able to elude rushers. He made some incredible plays last year. I think they feel safer with what they have at quarterback this year. And, listen, I don't hear coaches lean into this whole expectation thing very often. DeBowen has not shied away from, wanting to be one of the favorites in the group of six, trying to get that CFP bid. He mentioned in his Monday press conference how important this game was and that it could be a game that down the road people are looking at November as a massive one and, and figuring out who's going to make the CFP in that one spot.
Well, I mean, I think that is one of the interesting aspects of the game is the fact that, with all due respect to North Carolina TCU, if we're talking about which game could impact the season, this is the game that I would suspect would have the most playoff implications.
I agree. I mean, if you look at, I don't have the current CFP, make the CFP boards in front of me, but if you look at the numbers, the top seven or eight teams, and UNLV and Memphis, I think are in that group, are going to be somewhere between whatever, 10 and 25 to one to make the CFP. TCU, I mean, that would be a long shot. I think North Carolina is going to stink. I've already got a bet on our show of under 4.5 wins. So, well, that's an intriguing game because I want to see what happens, with Belichick, if Steve Belichick's going to show up. Like, there's storylines there. This is a really important game. And by the way, I know I keep saying the one CFP spot. I know they've tried to close some of the loopholes, but we never know what's going to happen this year. If there is a possibility, if there were two outstanding teams at the group of six level, that two teams could get back in. I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know.
No, but it does feel like if two teams are going to get in, right, Boise would probably have to run the table with a win at Oregon. Like, it feels like Boise, like, you need the team that could be in the top, whatever, eight on their own merits, and then, right, use the additional slot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd have to look at all the group of six schedules and see who else has a game that's anywhere close to an Oregon game. But I get your point. Like, there
I guess
to be
Navy's
good,
got Notre Dame. I mean, I just
that would be massive.
I just feel like I've always seen the Navy playing Notre Dame under ever since Marcus Freeman's taken over. I think the score's like 1,000-4.
Yeah, and so that's the outside shot is that someone gets a massive non-con win against a team.
San Diego State's got some chances, right? I think, and then obviously UNLV, because they also have Cal, correct, on the schedule, like in a month?
I just don't think between Memphis, North Texas, and Cal, that non-con, that would be big enough. I mean, Cal could have a magical season beyond, if they lost to UNLV, and then the Sagapola Tele kid could be a Heisman candidate. So I guess there are outside possibilities.
Did your show establish what type of barbecue would be best suited to serve at the stadium?
Well, we had a little argument yesterday. Someone tried to jump in and claim basically that pulled pork and brisket were the same in terms of prep, and we annihilated them. So that's up on the web now. I mean, Brisket is, I think, I mean, you guys would know better than I'd, Brisket is so much harder to get right than pulled pork, right? So the stadium, well, the stadium crew at Allegiant, the chefs are great. I think it would be very risky to try to throw some brisket out there, but you never know. These guys are good, man. On game day, they turn it on.
Also, even though we do brisket here, I think the brisket identity is more Texas barbecue.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I know I had brisket when I was in Memphis, but we've UNLV has gone to Texas a lot, and I've had a ton of brisket in Texas. Believe it or not, I think actually the best brisket I've had in Texas, this is probably blasphemy, was actually in Houston, so of all places.
I don't think that's – I've also been – I'm born and raised here, and we've gotten a little too tribalistic with barbecue. Yeah. I've now kind of resigned myself to this, like – most every good place that you go to, there is such thing as bad barbecue, but it's usually not the places that you're going to go to.
Right.
It's all smoked meat, and they all do a pretty damn good job. What ends up differentiating it is which sauce do you prefer the best and which place has the side dishes that you like the best. And, like, that's kind of, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of the actual main feature, everyone does a pretty good job.
Pretty much. I mean, I'm a fan of Kansas City as well. I know in Texas last year, I don't know what's happening in Memphis. I'm sure the same thing. I know in Texas last year, we were at the UNLV was at a bowl game in Dallas, so we hit a place, and I think my plate that didn't look that full was like $57. So I know that
price of beef didn't help Texas barbecue.
Yeah, barbecue ain't you know, a real cheap meal anymore.
No, it's not. Steve, you're great to join us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is Steve Cofield again. He handles the sidelines for the UNLV Radio Network, also the host of the Cofield and Company show on ESPN Las Vegas from 3 until 6 Pacific. Go check out his Twitter account over at Steve Cofield, also his YouTube channel at Cofield and Company. I think that's a little bit enlightening, George, and where I would say it starts to get enlightening is the whispers that you were starting to hear about, I don't know about Jackson Arnold. It seems like maybe the obvious answer is coming to fruition, in which anyone that's followed Dan Mullen's career, he is not afraid of playing two quarterbacks.
No.
But he has one quarterback that is his primary majority of the snaps quarterback. The
right.
Second quarterback is typically short yardage gimmick quarterback.
Yep. Gadget.
Correct. And
it we're at the point now where it's really feeling like, okay, they've got two guys that they like. One is a little bit better with his arm. One's a bit better with his legs. We're probably going to get a good dosage of both.
Yeah, Arnold's this.
And that's not saying Arnold's not athletic or not good with his legs. Quite
no,
the opposite.
It's just Orji is such a different type of runner. There are not many guys that can come at you 235, 240 pounds straight downhill.
Right. He is real. Like, if we were comparing these guys to running backs, Alex Orji is your between-the-tackles bruiser.
100%.
You do not want to get stuck in the gap one-on-one with him.
For all the millennials out there, he's the Lindale White. He's coming downhill.
And he's looking to inflict the damage.
Inflict pain. And then sometimes he inflicted his own pain. He got hurt in the Idaho State game.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the other point that Steve's making. Last year, Calandra was going to be the every down quarterback, but Orji was the gadget quarterback.
Right.
And he gets hurt, and then obviously Calandra has to be the every down. But I mean, this even goes back to, oh boy, I'd be really testing my Mullen knowledge. I don't ever recall him really going with two at Utah. Because he had Alex Smith for basically...
Yeah.
And Alex was always an underrated runner.
Oh, he was very athletic.
The reason why Alex Smith wound up at Utah, he was an option quarterback in high school.
Right.
I want to say with Reggie Bush. I think they played at the same high school.
That's a backfield right there. Goodness.
But he obviously, right when he got to Florida, he had Leak and Tebow.
Yep.
At State, he had Ralph and Tyson Lee.
Then after that, it felt like he...
Ralph, and then I want to say there's a Tyler Russell overlap with Ralph being short yardage. Dak was the primary guy, but even for a little bit, Dak started as the gadget quarterback.
There was a solid period of time where he really just ran with the one quarterback, but they were always quarterbacks that could do both and do both effectively.
Fitzgerald started as a gadget quarterback.
Yep.
Then getting to Florida, it was more one. But, I mean, he still had, at times, he would do, who wound up when everyone wanted him to play? He had Anthony Richardson as his gadget at one time, but then everybody wanted him to be the guy.
Oh, was that with Emory?
Yes, Emory. I was like Everett, Emory Jones.
Yep.
God,
he was athletic. Man, he was fun.
But, I mean, he's done this. And so I think the thing that will be interesting is, can they get Jackson Arnold to get the ball out of his hands? Because Jackson's problem as a thrower, I don't really feel like it's always like, man, that was a bad ball. It was, man, why won't he cut it loose? Like, he has always been a wants to see the guy open before he throws it.
Right, and that gets him in trouble.
Correct. Hold the ball.
Which, look, I mean, we said it earlier, Tapp is probably going to be one of the best defenders in the group of six period. Mike Montgomery is here as well. Like, they're going to get him in some pressure situations. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be the real question is Memphis going to dare them to throw? Because I do think,
kind of fill with the box a little bit, try and get some one-on-one, see if he'll
uncork
it.
I would think you would want to make him beat you with his arm.
Yep.
Because last year, what we did also see at Auburn, the best game of the year was the game that he played against Baylor, because Baylor refused to bring more people into the box.
Right.
They kept the box light, and he was able to just absolutely crush them with his legs. And that was kind of when he'd have success at Oklahoma. Oftentimes it was,
they were able to really establish a run game, force your hand into playing into what we really want to do. And I think that's probably the most interesting part of this is, one, what is actually going to be the breakup of the snaps between the two quarterbacks? Is it going to be, like Steve said, an 80-20 type situation? Or is it going to be more? Is it going to be more even?
See, I even care less about that. I think what it's going to be, to me, it's like, how many snaps does Alex Orji get that are not in gadget situations?
I think that's kind of where I'm leaning. Like, are you going to be able to force them into having to play Jackson more just because, like, if you're behind or if Memphis is able to put together these, like, long drives where you're just chewing up clock?
Well, see, like, that's kind of the other thing is, like, in my mind, I'm thinking about, all right, I do think it seems obvious that UNLV is going to want to establish the run.
Yes. I don't think that's a question.
Memphis is probably going to feel best about its run game, but Memphis, I expect to play at the breakneck, spot the ball speed.
I mean, that's Decker. Like, we've seen that.
Correct.
Time and time again.
But then that also becomes like, okay, how much shortened does this game get?
Right. Like, if we're trying to break it down into individual possessions, how many possessions are each team going to get?
You know something else I'm thinking about watching this year? Are teams, we know this doesn't apply to Memphis, are teams going to slow it down? For instance, Indiana plays at one of the slowest paces.
Right.
But the thought process is they wait until, I think, when's the green dot go out? 15 seconds on the play clock?
Something like that.
So apparently the thought process is we wait until you don't have time. Because it's not just you get to talk to your quarterback. Because, you know, of course, the stat with Kiffin and Charlie Weiss, it gets, ever since the quarterback coach communication's gone in. They lead the nation in points, yards per play,
right,
everything. But on the flip side, Indiana, which is the model of efficiency, they're not letting you talk to your green dot on defense and make an adjustment and running it like that. I am curious to see if more people adopt that, because
so I think that might be more of an Indiana thing specifically, because it felt like, it's not that there wasn't communication, like there obviously was communication between the staff and the quarterback, like duh, that's how they do this. I wonder how much of that is they are, I don't want to say that their offense was bland, but it felt like they had a limited set of plays, and it was, okay, you're doing one or five. Okay, we see what the defense is doing. You know it's one or you know it's five.
No, I agree with that. It's why I think Mendoza was such a difficult scout.
Right.
Because so much of what Mendoza was doing was either or.
Correct.
Now, the stuff that you could also have liked about Mendoza was it did feel like every time...
He made the right choice every time it felt like...
And also it felt like, you know, I do kind of... Hey, man, when the game gets tight, what do you do? And it's like, hey, he throws a bad pick six at Oregon, comes right down, goes down the field. They needed him desperately to play awesomely in that third and fourth quarter. Kind of got him behind the eight ball a little bit at Penn State.
But then he did.
Correct.
He rebounded.
Had to make a big throw against Ohio State. I still kind of think that that was an outside throw one-on-one, like, hey. I mean, you had to execute it, but like,
I think there was some big moment performances. Right, and I think that was the other thing that Indiana, and even to an extent, the other half of this, where we're talking about with Indiana, it was one of the slowest paced offenses, but it was incredibly efficient. On the other hand, we're talking about Kiffin and Weiss, where it is maybe not as efficient, but it is effective and it's fast.
Correct.
Player evaluation. Both of them pick quarterbacks and pick players around them to a T to fit what they want to do.
Yeah, I guess the larger point that I have is what has surprised me about the Indiana, the Cignetti of it all, is I guess maybe it's such an overwhelming turnaround. I don't see more curiosity about, hey, what do they do?
Right.
What?
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina DiAnaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.